Maxine Hong Kingston is known for mixing fiction, autobiography, and legend as she's chronicled the Chinese-American experience in her books, which include The Woman Warrior, Memoirs of a Girlhood Among Ghosts, Chinamen, and Tripmaster Monkey, his fake book. Her latest, titled I Love a Broad Margin to My Life, is a quasi-memoir, but it's in the form of a free verse poem. It's just out from Knopf, and I'm delighted that it brings Maxine Hong Kingston back to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
Now, I'm not going to ask you to speak in free verse, but have you written much poetry before?
I began with poetry, and as a baby, before I could write, I recited poetry, and so now it's just a return to my origins.
Had you been writing poetry all along, or feeling that you wanted to write poetry all along?
Well, in a way, my books were poetry. I would begin by writing a poem, and I think it's just going to be a short poem, and they just got longer and longer. And so then I just put them into paragraph form.
Well, often poetry is a form of memoir, isn't it? Because people are talking about their stories and their feelings. So if we just string a whole book of poems together, we wind up with some sense of what a person's life has been.
Yes, and the poems would include dreams, imagination, and conjectures.
Your title is quite striking. Where does it come from? I Love a Broad Margin to My Life.
It comes from Henry David Thoreau, and he said that when he moved and built his little house next to Walden Pond, and he's sitting on the threshold of his house, and he's thinking about how am I going to live deliberately? I am going to learn to pay attention to my life. And one way to do that is to get away from all those noisy neighbors. But even as he's sitting there, he hears the band music coming from Concord. And he hears brass, he hears drums, and he says, I hear my neighbors getting ready to go to war with Mexico. And so then he makes up his mind that he's not going to pay taxes. And I find, and as he's sitting there, he says, I love a broad margin to my life. And I think, okay, we're talking about a couple of things. We want room and space away from our neighbors. But he's also talking about national borders, because we're talking about our invasion of Mexico, and that history reverberates to this day.
Well, the invasion of Mexico is a major part of the American story, not our proudest moment. We've had a number of wars that perhaps we will have regretted. One of them, the war in Vietnam, for many people. And you—that's when you became an anti-war activist.
Yes, it was.
Would you still have been a writer?
Oh, I was an anti-war activist and a writer. It was all happening at once. In fact, the war gave me stories to write, and also clarifying my own stance as a pacifist. That also gave me stories.
Also, well, in the case of the war with Mexico, there was a lot of talk about what it meant to be an American. And this is something you've thought a lot about. Now, you were born in Stockton and didn't go to China until you were much older. Mm-hmm. But do you, since you grew up in a very Chinese family under, you know, and obviously your writing suggests that that you're in a constant dialogue between the country you were born in and the country your family came from. How do you see yourself?
Well, in fact, the first essay I ever published, I was 15 years old, and I published in American Girl magazine, and the essay was called I Am an American. And I wrote it at the time of segregation, people were thinking and rethinking what are the rights and who deserves these rights. And so I wrote this essay making it very plain that though there's I came from a Chinese background, that my parents came from elsewhere, that there are legal rights of being an American.
Well, this was a time also, that was about 54 or so,
yeah,
when McCarthyism was at its height, and there was all this talk about Red China. I don't know whether that had an impact on people like you who were born in this country.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it all had an impact. Back to the, as far as the 19th century, there all of the racism, the pogroms against Chinese and the exclusion acts. You know, my parents were both illegal immigrants, but they were well-documented illegal immigrants. And
do the people in Congress know about this? Or is the statute of limitations pass on?
No. Actually, we were so well documented.
Because now they talk about taking away your citizenship
That's
as a
right.
child born in this country of illegal immigrants.
That's right. We were so well documented that I have two brothers who were in the military, and they both got top secret security clearance because nobody could find what really happened. But the way it affected us and our whole family. Most of my life, we were always afraid that we would get caught and deported.
I was thinking about I Am an American as something that other hyphenated writers have felt something, they felt it necessary to write. Edwige Dantecut, for example, I think wrote something very similar after she came here, around the same age that you were, maybe I know it was in high school. And I suspect this is something that everybody who, or many people who have to wonder about what their place is in a society go through.
And then after you have claimed America and made it clear that this is your identity, then the next task is to say, wait a minute, I haven't lost the old country. And so this I love a broad margin to my life also is saying, let's make the borders so wide that I can go and explore China and go all through China and find everything there that belongs to me and also say this is another place where I belong and then still be able to get a visa back home.
Well, you use the expression talk story throughout the book. What exactly does that mean? Is that a Chinese tradition?
Yes, and it's a translation of the Chinese term gongguzhai, which is talk story, and it is the inheritance that we get from our ancestors.
Well, but we're not talking about the oral tradition because China has had written language for a very long time.
But there's a written language that a lot of people can't read. The most complex language on earth, I think. And also China has hundreds of dialects. But though people can't read this literate language, they can pass on the stories by word of mouth.
It is ironic that written language is read the same throughout all the dialects, so that if you're Cantonese and you say Docha, you read the same thing as somebody who's reading Mandarin who says Shesha, characters.
That's right.
But if you can't read, then you have no idea what your neighbor is saying.
But then
in the same country.
Yes. But all of the villages and it's a wide culture where there are storytellers. And you sit in the village square, and my grandfather will tell a story, and they're passed on. And it's myth, history, small stories, big stories, poetry.
Is that what you felt you were doing in writing this?
Oh, yeah. I feel I do participate in the oral tradition, but...
Well, verse is often written to be read aloud.
Yeah, yeah. And I compose aloud, although I feel something... happens when I write things down. I don't know what happens. It gets frozen, or it's a different audience.
Well, I've seen so many writers who have put little notes in their books for readings because it was one thing to write it, and then when they started reading it out loud, they discovered that they didn't really like the way it sounded, and so. If there were second editions, they would want to change them.
Yes.
In this book, you return to a character you've written about before, Whitman Ah Sing. Now, that's a fictional character.
Mm-hmm.
Why include him in a memoir?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I write nonfiction and I write biography, I feel that I get to the truth of actual people if I can also tell about their imaginations. And so Whitman Ah Sing is like my imaginary friend. And I take him with me as an ally on my travels. And he's my helper. But then there comes a time, maybe toward the middle of the book, where I decide that in order to live deliberately, I need to travel alone. And so I let him go. And then I am more like Thoreau. I go on by myself.
Maxine Hong Kingston's latest book is called I Love a Broad Margin to My Life, inspired by a line from Thoreau, at least the title, published by Knopf. You talk about turning 65, but you're 70 now.
Yes.
The book just came out. What's happened in the intervening years?
Oh, in the intervening years, I wrote this book.
Oh, so you started writing it at 65.
Yeah, it started at 65, and by the time I was almost 70, I was at the end of the book, and what I discovered was that during the 4 years in which I was writing, so many friends and relatives died, and so I would have written an elegy to each one, but there are so many, so I give a catalog, a list of all those friends, and my feeling as each one died was that, oh, I want to go with you. I feel you drawing me to go with you. And this is, at the end, I almost felt as if I was writing an anti-suicide note.
But a lot of people have told me that as they've gotten older, they've engaged in some kind of dialogue with the obituary page.
Oh, no, I don't read the obituaries. No, I don't do that.
Now, your father was a poet, and you talk about translating his poetry. And I was thinking about the spoken aspect of Chinese. Did he write in the Seyup dialect?
No. He wrote...
I'm talking about in his head, because he would be writing the same words for people all over China. And I wonder what happens to poetry that was written where I'm thinking... Cantonese, somebody else is reading it in Shanghai and saying it out loud in Shanghaiese.
The vernacular is very different from literary language in Chinese. And so while my father would speak Seyup on a daily basis, that's the common language. But when he created poetry, and creating it aloud, it would be almost a different language.
When you went to China, you found pictures of yourself on a family altar. Did the Chinese traditionally keep altars to family members who live elsewhere?
No. Usually the altar would have the people who are gone. But since the family is so far apart and we communicate by sending pictures to each other, they put pictures of American people that are still alive on the altar.
You're right. The kids are all boys. The girls have been adopted out to the most loving, well-educated parents in the West. Chinese girls will take over and improve America. Beside that possibility, what do you think will happen in the coming years as boys reach maturity and have a limited number of single women available for them to marry?
I think that's already a problem in China. And they've been trying to address it. I see the propaganda posters up, and there's always pictures of girls, and when they have birth control pictures or if for one child policy, they always show a girl, a beautiful little girl, with everybody loving her, and so the Chinese are trying very hard to get each other to find girls valuable.
Because people are having abortions when they discover that the baby's going to be a girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, as we said, they often gave them up to adoption if they couldn't afford it. It's a self-defeating situation. You're right. May my family choose to farm with buffalo rather than machinery, fully aware of the of bettering the health of planet Earth. Isn't farming with buffalo subsistence farming? Can you survive on that kind of farming?
I don't know. I don't know whether you can. I know that the Chinese have tried collectivizing the land. They've tried dividing it in different ways. So I don't know whether you can survive that way.
In China, you write, you found that you are Empress of the Center, and you say, I was bowed to. I was addressed Your Majesty.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're an American?
No, because I am the Empress of the Center.
You come from a farming family.
No, but that family, I mean, now they're farmers, but they were the original Chusung kings, emperors, and
you come out of the royal family.
Yeah, when I got to my mother's village temple, the Song Dynasty kings were the pictures were all around the altar, and then from their pictures, there was the genealogy, family tree, and it led directly to us.
Your mother lived to 100, and you calculate your age against hers as giving you 30 years to go. But you say that you've said all you have to say. Do you really think that's true? And what about that book that was destroyed in a house fire 20 years ago? Have you been able to say what that book said?
Oh, yes,
in subsequent work?
Yeah, I have. That book was became part of the Fifth Book of Peace. But at this moment, after finishing I Love a Broad Margin, I really can't think of anything else I
want
to say.
So you're going to retire, maybe.
Yes.
I suspect other things will occur to you. Meanwhile, Maxine Hong Kingston will be speaking at the 92nd Street Y, introduced by Toni Morrison, tonight at 8 o'clock. And if you want to know about tickets, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. The book, I Love a Broad Margin to My Life, which is published by Knopf and written in verse. Did you have to go back to make sure it was always in verse, or did it just flow?
Oh, it just flowed. But the way I made sure was to read it aloud.
Well, thank you so much for being with us again. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Maxine Hong Kingston.
Thank you, Leonard.